then back. Here we go. Right, let's go forward one. Great. Two themes of humanity's rebellion in Genesis chapter 3. The first was about trusting ourselves rather than God, and the second was about broken relationships in four sort of aspects. One between humans and God, one between humans and each other, one between humans and the creation, and one between humans and ourselves, and those relationships getting broken. And those themes, they run throughout the rest of Scripture, and we'll see them popping up in our reading this morning. So the focus of what we're going to be hearing about today is the story of Cain and Abel, who are presented in the Genesis narrative as the sons of Adam and Eve. And what Becca was saying right at the back of the start of the series a few months ago is that Genesis is this collection of stories from a storytelling culture, and each one of them has like a theme or a truth about humanity that sort of strikes a keynote that plays its way out throughout the rest of Genesis and the Bible. So those sort of themes and things in this story will sort of set the scene for things that come up later on in the Bible. So we will start reading from Genesis 4 verse 1. You want to start reading by it. Yeah, it's on the screen, also if you want to find it on any phones and so on. So it says, Adam knew his wife, Eve. Now that word knew there, it's a bit of a euphemism that the Old Testament uses for sexual relationship between a man and a wife. I think it's actually quite a neat analogy about sort of fully, total intimacy between a man and his wife. But we're not actually going to dwell on that for much longer. We'll go into that in more detail at another moment. So, Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. I'm going to pause there as well. I won't keep on doing this. But I just want to comment there and linger a little bit on what Eve has just said there. I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. I wondered if anyone had any initial thoughts or impressions about what she said there. Is that good? Is that bad? Any thoughts? Everyone's looking quite confused. I think it's a bit mixed, to be honest. I think on the one hand, she's done the thing that she was supposed to do. She's been fruitful and multiplied. She's made another human. That's what she's supposed to be doing in the image of God. And she gives some credit to God, she says, with the help of the Lord, he's sort of in the picture as well. But to me it seems at least that the focus of that statement is all on Eve and what she's done. Suddenly she makes herself she's the creator, she's the one that has gotten a man. And God is kind of like an afterthought in that sentence. So maybe let's keep that in the back of your mind, because we'll come back again to Eve and her perspectives on her children later on. So she says this, and again she bore his brother Abel. That means Abel was probably Cain's younger twin. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain was a worker of the ground. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. So they bring two offerings. Cain brings some grain that he's grown from the ground, and Abel brings maybe like a lamb or a sheep to offer to the Lord. So the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. So, I'm going to pause there again and ask you a quick question, another question. There's going to be quite a few of these, so get ready for some backs and forwards. So, this guy on the right here that you can see on your screen, he is a guy called Erasmus, who was a Dutch guy who lived about 500 years ago. Some of you might recognise the name from the Erasmus Student Exchange Programme. That's named after this guy. And he was having a dinner party about 500 years ago with the other guy on the left, who's called John Collett, who was an English priest. And they got on to speaking about the story of Cain and Abel, and they began to have a really heated discussion. So what I wanted to ask was, what do you think the question was that caused them to have such a heated debate about what we've just read? What were they disputing? What were they disagreeing about? Again, any thoughts? Jamie?
Is it what was wrong with Cain's offering?
Perfect. That is the bang-on answer. That is the question that everybody has always asked about this question. Why was it that Abel's offering received sacrifice, but Cain's didn't? And theologians have come up with all sorts of ideas over the years as to why there was that difference between the two sacrifices. Now, some people have said option A is because Cain brings a grain offering, which is sort of reflective of agricultural life, but Abel brings a meat offering, and that's pastoral life, and in some way the meat offering is better. But the problem with that is that both offerings are deemed acceptable, and it says later on in the Bible, in the book of Leviticus, that grain offerings are an acceptable form of offering, and so are meat offerings. And sorry if all this sacrifice stuff is a bit weird. We can talk about that more later if you want to go into some more detail about why we don't do any of this today. But yeah, both these types of offering are acceptable to God. Other people have thought that maybe it's because Abel brings, it's something to do with the way that he prepares the sacrifice or how he brings it. He brings the fat portion, which some people have thought is like the most valuable part of the animal to the Lord. But to me, that doesn't fully explain why Cain doesn't get any favour at all. Why does Cain get no feedback from God about how he could do his sacrifice better next time? It's just not there, do you know? Instead, I think the answer may come back to three little words. And these three little words were the most repeated sentence in my house growing up. Now, I had three siblings, and we had a really competitive environment as kids. So I want to ask again the question, what do you think those three words, that sentence was? Any clues? What might little kids say all the time in the house?
It's not fair.
It's not fair. There we go. They were the three little words that came up absolutely constantly in my house growing up. It could have been about absolutely anything. Who got to stay up late and who didn't? Who got to go to a friend's house and who had to go shopping with mom? Who got sweets and who didn't? Absolutely anything. It's always, it's not fair. Going round and round and round. And as I thought about it, I think this question has also followed me and my family into our adult lives. Who got help paying rent at university and who didn't? When my sister and I shared a car for a little bit of time, it was absolute chaos about, you know, who was paying for petrol and who got used the car on any given day. It was terrible. But on a serious note, I think this thing, it's not fair, that can sort of follow us, and these narratives can stick with us all the way from childhood into our adult life. So, going back to the passage, and to me, I think the reason why Abel's sacrifice got favour and Cain's didn't, it might be deliberately ambiguous. And that's because the focus of the story isn't on this question. In the Bible, there's loads and loads written in the books of Leviticus and so on about what sort of sacrifices are good and not good, but the focus of the story is somewhere else. Now, I am not the only person that thinks this, fortunately. A lot of what I'm going to say this morning is based on a couple of professors who you may or may not be able to see. That guy at the top is called John Levinson. He's from Harvard. He's a Jewish professor. And the guy down the bottom is from, he's called Walter Mogley. He's from Durham, and he's been teaching me in biblical studies this year. And he is just as nice in person as maybe you might be able to see them. He's a lovely little guy. But basically, what they say is this: not every inequity is an iniquity. Not every time where there's disparity or difference is it are things intrinsically like wrong or unfair. Sometimes life just happens. You know, one person gets favour and another person gets unfavour. And the key question, the really important thing in this passage is all about how do we respond when we face those times of seeming unfavour or seeming disparity. So we're going to continue and find out how Cain responds. It says Cain was very angry, or a better way of translating that might be distressed. His face fell, he was so distressed. And the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry or distressed? And why is your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is contrary to you or against you, but you must rule over it." So Cain's instant reaction is like confusion, distress. What's going on? Why does Abel get all the favour, but I don't get any? And I think he moves on quickly from there to assume this whole situation is just unfair. I wonder if Cain has like assumed that God's favour has somehow run out. That it's been all expended on Abel and there's no more left for him. So it's at this point that God chooses to speak. And God doesn't offer an explanation of what has been going on. He offers a choice. He asks Cain a question. And that is so similar to how God speaks to so many of us today. God asks you another question. He doesn't necessarily explain everything. He asks you a question, gives you a bit of insight. So I want us to imagine we're sort of back at those two trees in the garden that Jamie was talking about a couple of months ago. And God walks Cain through his options. Which path, which tree are you going to walk towards? And often when things seem unfair to us, we have a similar choice to make. It's really quickly and easily we can move from confusion into jealousy, from jealousy into bitterness, from bitterness into resentment, and before you know it, you have opened the door for sin to come into your life. Now the image that is used in this passage is actually of a Babylonian mythical demon called Rabisu. And Rabisu was said in Babylonian folklore to crouch outside people's doors, waiting for an opportunity to get in. Except the threat in this passage isn't Rabisu, but it's about sin. And what's at stake isn't your house or your possessions, but it's about your heart and the state of your heart and your emotions. God makes it really clear to Cain, like, keep your eyes open. It's that thing again that we were singing about this morning. Keep your eyes open. You still have a choice. It's not a foregone conclusion. Sin may be crouching at your door, but you may master it. So, we're left with a question. Will Cain trust God, or will he act on his human impulses? Let's read on to find out. So from verse 8, it says this. Cain spoke to his brother Abel, saying, "Let us go out into the field." And when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel, and he killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" He said, "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?" And the Lord said, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying out to me from the ground. And now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened up its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hands. When you work the ground, it shall no longer yield to you its strength. You shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth." God said to the Lord, Cain said to the Lord, My punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, you have driven me today away from the ground, and from your face I shall be hidden. I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me. But the Lord said to him, no, not so. If anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord put a mark on Cain, lest anyone who found him should attack him. Then Cain went away from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. So, some of you might have known where this story was going. Unfortunately, this case study, this micro story, it doesn't have a happy ending on this occasion. Just one chapter on from humanity's first rebellion in the garden, we get the story of the first murder. And it's the first sure sign of those broken relationships that Becca was talking about a couple of weeks ago between different humans. It's a bit ironic because humans, they were worried about death in the garden, but it's humans that bring death into the picture. This is the first story of death in the Bible. The story powerfully illustrates the poisonous consequences of allowing jealousy, bitterness, and resentment to bubble up inside of us. I put on the handout is a quote from Paul's letter to the Romans in chapter 6, where it says, "The wages of sin is death." And I wonder if Paul had this story in the back of his mind when he was writing that. Cain, his response, he's unrepentant. He doesn't care. He's self-centered. He has no sort of thoughts about what's happened to Abel. It's kind of crazy. He doesn't try to hide his actions, really. He just says, am I my brother's keeper? Do I care? He complains about their consequences. He's like, God, my punishment's too great. You know, sending me out to wander, that's too much of a bad punishment on me. And so in doing so, Cain goes through this pattern, again, the broken relationships. He's broken his relationship with another man through that murder. He breaks his relationship with God, and his relationship to the ground is broken as a result. And that's what you read in that passage. There's a brokenness between Cain and the ground. And so he's left to wander in the land of Nod. Nod doesn't mean sleep, it means wandering in the Hebrew. So what comes next in the rest of the chapter is that humanity, unfortunately, continues to spiral away from God and the blueprint that Rich was talking to us about a month or so ago. The next character that we see in detail is called Lamech, who's the descendant of Cain. And Lamech, he takes two wives instead of the one wife that we read about as being God's blueprint for humanity. Perhaps Cain's jealousy has sort of developed into a covetousness, a like wanting more and more in Lamech. He wants one wife isn't enough, he has to have two, and so on. Lamech sings this arrogant song to his wives. He boasts that if anyone were to wound him or insult him, then he would kill them. And he says these words, if Cain's revenge is sevenfold, then Lamech's revenge is 77-fold. It's a bit of a disturbing note to end on how far away humanity has gone from the beautiful picture that they had in the garden, living with God. So, where then is the hope for us today? That's the big question. You know, this is a really tough, troubling, and potentially triggering chapter, but it's not without its traces of hope or redemption. Let's read the last couple of verses in the chapter. It says, Adam knew his wife Eve again. So again, we've got this picture of Adam and Eve having sex, making a baby. She bore a son and called his name Seth. For she said, God has appointed for or granted me another offspring instead of Abel, for Cain killed him. Now watch out for what Eve says there, that something subtle seems to have changed in Eve's approach. She's moved from that confident, boastful, I have produced a child, to God has granted me, God has appointed me with another son. Something's changed. And we read the last verse as well, to say, to Seth, another son was born, and he called his name Enosh. At that time, people began to call upon the name of the Lord. And that last verse is the grassroots of a revival. Something is being expressed as people begin to call upon God's name again. And we might see where that goes in our series next week. So there's roots, there's hope in this chapter that's full of that. There are a couple of seeds, a couple of offshoots of the beginnings of hope. But the other key is in Seth himself. As my last question is, does anyone know, a bit of Bible trivia, where the name Seth comes up again in the Bible? Any ideas?
What's that?
Noah's sons, yeah. Outside of Genesis. In Gospel of Luke, any ideas? So Seth appears in the genealogy of Jesus. So right at the start of Luke's Gospel, Luke shows how Jesus is connected all the way back to Adam, and Seth is the son through whom that connection happens. And it's in Jesus that we have our hope today. That's not just a clever segue, it works theologically, it's all about Jesus. It's in Jesus that we have the ultimate key to understanding times of rejection, suffering, and death. Jesus was God's beloved son. He was the perfect human. He knew no sin. He didn't ever sin in his life. Yet he carried our sin upon him. He was tortured and he was put to death following an unjust trial at the hands of a corrupt religious and political elite. None of it was fair. But Jesus went willingly and chose the path of forgiveness. Where Lamech boasted about his 77-fold revenge, Jesus commanded us to forgive 77-fold times. And when he was there on the cross, he said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing." Where Cain chose that path of bitterness, jealousy, and resentment, Jesus chose only love, compassion, and forgiveness. So when we look upon Jesus' death on the cross, I think we can recognise something about what it means to acknowledge when things don't seem fair, and learn to put our trust in God instead. When we come upon those times in life of disappointment and disfavour, of confusion and distress, we can choose to trust in Jesus and his Spirit. And through that, we can face down those times of jealousy and injustice, and choose trust and obedience instead. Now, it's not easy. It requires strength and it requires bravery. But those are the sorts of things that I believe the Holy Spirit gives us in abundance. We don't have to face sin alone. And with the power of God inside us, we can overcome it.